Good afternoon, good morning to everybody, and it's an honor to be here. I'm a research engineer at Bose. I studied under Dr. Amar Bose at MIT and joined Bose in 1984. I was inspired by Ms. Bateson's remarks at the end of her lecture on interdisciplinary education, and it occurred to me for the first time that audio and acoustics is inherently interdisciplinary because you need to bring together, you know, physics, electronics, electrical engineering, magnetics, mechanics, and perception. I think I'm missing a few. In order to do anything meaningful in the field. And maybe that's one reason that Dr. Bose was so attracted to Dr. Wiener and vice versa. I also would share a personal story about, I think you implied the difficulty involved in interdisciplinary education in higher education, and that was certainly my experience. I had to put together a, you know, hand-rolled degree at the University of Minnesota, and I had to get faculty members from three different departments, in my case, mathematics, architecture, and music, in order to receive an undergraduate degree. I think it's a little more effort than, you know, taking a more typical degree. And the same thing is true at MIT. There is no degree in acoustics at MIT. And if you take one in, you have to take one in one of the more traditional subjects, you will be, in fact, discriminated against, because if you try to study acoustics, by definition, you won't be studying the core curriculum of that sponsoring department, which is what happened to me. So today, I'm going to let Dr. Bose do most of the talking. I'm going to share with you a video. I've been involved over the last few years in trying to do a good job of archiving what we have in terms of audio and video recordings of Dr. Bose. And this is a short 3-minute or so segment where he talks about his relationship with Dr. Wiener, certainly in a way much better than anything I could say. So let's start with that, and then I'll come back.
The last book he wrote, which was Nonlinear Problems in Random Theory, was written on my blackboard over a period of 2 to 3 years, if I remember. And Wiener was a right-handed person, and he always took the eraser in his left hand, and he went like this. Then he started again. And so he needed a blackboard only that was this high. And he'd write all this huge, long equation, but by the time he actually got to the end, the first part was gone. And so he did this for a couple of years. He'd come in, and I could understand maybe 10 or maybe 20% of what he was doing, or at least I thought I could. And one day he came in, and he wrote a huge equation down. He said, "Bose, that's it. Write it up." About 20 minutes of discussion followed for me trying to convince him, A, I didn't understand it, B, you never left it on the board because you erase with your left hand everything you write with your right hand. And there's no way. Oh, you understood it. Don't worry. He really thought that other people had that same kind of ability. He couldn't conceive that they didn't. And it took about 20 minutes until I could somehow make him believe that I didn't, and tell him to come into a classroom, put all his stuff on the board. We'll photograph it. We'll tape record you, and then we'll produce the book. So I did that with a group of doctorate students also. And we would go home at night, and we'd come in the next day on a cloud. My God, Wiener made a mistake, and we caught it. You know, we were really feeling great. Well, I'll tell you a phenomenal result. There wasn't one result in that whole book that was in error. What it was is he could see, he developed this ability to see over the fence. And it was all mundane stuff in between. In fact, sometimes he'd catch his own mistakes. We wouldn't point it out to him, even if we did see it in the class. Well, he would catch his own mistakes, and he'd get so depressed, he would leave the classroom, go back. And I would go back to his office afterward, and he would say, "Bose," he said, "I'm gonna, I'm gonna leave MIT. I'm simply gonna resign. He said, I can't even do arithmetic. And he'd be as down as a child. And you'd have to slowly bring him back up, and a couple days later, he'd decide again to resume the class. And what it was he had developed this incredible ability in his mind to see over all those steps, which were a nuisance, and see what could be done and what the answer was. The only day I ever saw him in his life that he was angry, he came steaming into my office, and oh boy, he was puffing. What's the matter? Well, there was a world-renowned mathematician that was working with him. In fact, there were tons of mathematicians who used to hover around his office like bees, hoping to get one little thing that would cause him they could work on for 5 or 10 years. And so basically, he said, this particular fellow, he said, ah, it's so frustrating. He can't see over the fence. He stumbles on all the things that are in front of the fence. And that gave me some insight to the way that this man thought.
Dr. Bose was profoundly influenced by Wiener. And you can see that, I believe, in what you just saw, this ability to see over the fence and not get sidetracked by all of the obstacles that anyone can think of when you have an idea. Remarkably, I mean, you might look at this and you might think, oh, he's speaking to erudite audience at MIT or someplace like that. In fact, he's speaking to the employees at the recently inaugurated manufacturing plant in Columbia, South Carolina, with this message. I don't know if you saw or heard Dr. Bose say that the trick for helping Wiener with his last book was to get him to not erase as with his left hand as he wrote with his right. And it's funny because Dr. Bose is left-handed. And you know, Dr. Bose was sort of dragged into teaching against his will, but once he started teaching, became a renowned teacher, professor at MIT, and worked extremely hard on his classroom technique. One of the most remarkable things about Dr. Bose's teaching was his blackboard technique. And so he could write, he was left-handed, he could write with his left hand and erase simultaneously with his right in order to make space on the blackboard. And we have some amazing video of him doing this in a totally second nature way. Well, so they got Wiener to slow down. I know that I only have a few minutes left and I think I'll be fine, thank you. They got him to slow down by taking photographs after he would finish an equation. And then you heard him say, and tape record. Well, I came across this video, I don't know, 5 years ago or something. And I always wondered, you know, are the photographs around? And they've never turned up. But about a month ago, after it, I had accepted the invitation to speak here, Ursula Bose, Dr. Bose's widow, was going through some of his things. He died a little less than a year ago, and came across this. And she called me right away. Now, it's going to be hard to read, but it says Wiener Lecture 15, April 15th, 1958, and Wiener Lecture 16, April 22nd, a week later, 1958. And as an audio engineer, I looked at these. Of course, I came right out of my skin with the possibilities, but you can't see it with the light on, but you'll see that whoever rewound this tape, it's still hard to see, and it doesn't matter, I'll explain it, rewound it in fast speed. And any audio engineer knows that that is the worst way to store tape, because what happens is it doesn't wind flat on the reel. And over time, that can be a disaster for tape. And this looked like it was taped from 1958. So we sent it to a very special place, Iron Mountain Digital, which has a laboratory 600 feet underground for doing careful digital transfers of potentially valuable things like this. They worked on the John F. Kennedy library material, for example. We thought if anybody can get whatever might be on this tape off of it, it would be Iron Mountain Digital. So you can imagine, I almost drove it out to Pennsylvania myself, because I thought FedEx is probably better at this than I am in terms of risk. It came back, and it is, in fact, two lectures from 1958. It is, in fact, the lectures that Dr. Bose and the graduate students recorded. And I'm going to close by giving you, it is the last two lectures of this series. And I'm going to play the last part of the last lecture, which is only about a minute long. And it's Wiener's farewell to this group of students and to Dr. Bose for this particular class. And I'm not going to tell you what I take from it. I think you'll get a very strong sense, though, of some of the things that Dr. Bose mentioned in his video and some of the things that undoubtedly you know about Wiener far more than me.
What one needs to do to get a fairly good gas theory, and this would apply to a plasma gas theory, is to find some mathematical trick which will prevent the energy running out in the infinitely high frequencies, and which will reconstitute the roughness of the randomness, the granular structure, each time it seems to be destroyed. I think that can be done, and I think that way we can get at least a first approximation to Gauss theory by the sort of method we've given. Well, gentlemen, I thank you for the course, for being with me in the course. I thank you for the enormous help you've given me. I thank you for your bearing with me when I've been pretty clumsy the last few days. Clumsy partly because the work has been difficult, partly because I'm clumsy in arranging it. I don't think there's any use trying now to polish stuff that will take me months or years to get in good shape again. But I hope that when I do come to get this in good shape in another year, some or all of you will be with me and we can work together again. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ken. The fantastic resources, the film and the audio. Really, really terrific and well wrapped up by you.